From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Santa Clara.
Santa Cruz.
Union City.
Hayward.
San Francisco.
I'm from Fremont.
Yo, I'm San Jose, just downtown.
Coming up, we walk in the shoes of BART police officers and the people who oversee them.
There's a term that we use that's called lawful but awful.
Then we'll learn what it takes for small businesses to succeed in the city.
Hire slowly and to fire quickly.
And we'll visit a thriving Daly City bowling alley where the neighborhood throws down.
Right now we're behind lanes 41 and 42, and it's almost like a full house right now. I believe it's 1:30 a.m. We got about 50-something lanes going, and all I see is a party.
We bring the party to you today on Cross Currents. How do you get around the Bay Area? You may be like 370,000 other people who ride BART on an average weekday. That's like moving the entire population of Oakland by train. Like any city, BART needs people to keep the peace. There are currently about 200 BART police.
Two new videos surfaced today in the shooting death of a young man New Year's Day at an East Bay BART station by a BART police officer.
But two fatal shootings involving BART officers and increasing rider complaints in the past few years led to calls for more oversight. So last year, the district established the BART Citizen Review Board, an 11-member council that monitors BART police action. The review board met last month for a two-day session focused on transit police training, from the laws of arrest to use of force and racial profiling. KALW's Nicole Jones has this report.
In a conference room at the BART police headquarters in downtown Oakland, a DVD plays a scenario. The screen shows a woman, and she's really angry. She's just been locked out of her house after finding out her husband is cheating on her. Her aggression grows, quickly turning violent. She kicks one officer, and he falls to the ground.
Stop the shovel, ma'am. Citizen police! Stop the shovel! Now listen, you just need to calm down.
This
calm
is my property. This is my house.
All right, folks.
Okey-dokey.
Using this standard police training video, a handful of BART's Citizen Review Board are trying to walk in the shoes of the police officers they monitor. BART Sergeant Marlon Dixon starts the discussion.
You're the officer on the scene. You've gone through that scenario. What do you think? Speechless?
I am speechless. I mean, I think the calm down didn't work. I mean,
okay.
You don't. Obviously, she was out of control. I don't know what you do with someone out of control like that.
The second officer, you guys think he was justified in drawing his weapon on this woman? What do you think?
Yes.
Never thought I'd say yeah.
Okay. What about shooting her? If she continued to approach. This is happening like this. He's got his officer down. The officer could be seriously injured. What do you think?
Oh, hell, shoot her.
So you think it would be justified?
BART Citizen Review Board member Bob White isn't so sure. After all, the board emerged from public pressure following the fatal shooting of Oscar Grant in 2009.
Although she has, looks like she had martial experience, whatever, and I know the right answer would be yes, shooting her, because she can use deadly force, but she was unarmed, and I couldn't justify. If he had a taser or something like that, I would use that first before using deadly force.
BART police policies say that in this kind of situation, use of lethal force is legal. But Sergeant Dixon explains that there's more to it than just reading from the rule book.
There's a term that we use that's called lawful but awful. So it might be lawful per policy, per the law, but the public's going to tear into you because perception is everything.
BART knows this firsthand after two fatal officer-involved shootings in the last few years. Civilian Oversight Board is now responsible for hearing a wide range of alleged police misconduct at their meetings every month. With the help of a new independent police auditor, they can recommend disciplinary action to the BART Board of Directors. The Citizen Review Board was created last March, but didn't have its first meeting until after last July's fatal officer-involved shooting of Charles Hill. The Hill case has been brought up at Citizen Review Board meetings, but they're still far from having the investigation completed. BART officer trainer Carolyn Perea says having these training sessions for the Citizen Review Board should help them understand this and future incidents.
We all thought that it was very important that they understand how we train and why we train and where we get our authority.
This training is just one on a long list of recommendations from an audit report by the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement, or NOBLE. Along with civilian oversight, the 2010 report made recommendations on BART Police Department policies, tactics, hiring, and investigations by comparing it to international law enforcement standards. Community Service Officer Lauren LaPlante works in the department's community-oriented policing unit.
Any way that we are making the community more accessible to the police department, whether it be the Civilian Review Board, whether it be, you know, us going out to community meetings, I think we need to be engaging in all those practices.
Community policing encourages law enforcement to partner with residents, businesses, and local groups. LaPlante says community policing at BART started in the mid-90s. But now the agency is implementing a new model called zone policing. Zone policing breaks the current BART zones into five smaller areas. LaPlante says this makes it easier for lieutenants to manage crime trends and for police officers to get to know stations.
This is a semi-new concept. In terms of the community policing philosophy, it's going to bring more accountability to it.
On a recent Thursday morning, Officer Rick Martinez took up his zone assignment.
So traffic for 13.
1021-7055.
We just left the Lake Merritt station. That's our headquarters for BART Police. And we're actually in Zone 1, and I am the Adam 13 unit today. So my responsibility is the Rock Ridge and MacArthur BART station.
Martinez has been with the agency for 6 years.
So in my time, we've gone to from an agency that essentially had no community relation. There wasn't that transparency.
Before, Martinez says, people didn't understand BART Police's mission.
We come into our station, we kind of take a look at who's around. And people stick out that are hanging out here. Because, again, it's our stations are designed for a specific reason. We're here to move people. So we're going to get out and just walk around here and be visible and be part of the community here. So. People want to come up and strike a conversation. They're more than able to do so. We're here to help. We're here to be accessible. We're here to be approachable.
How do you get to the DMV?
See where the stop sign is?
Yeah.
Walk all the way down till you reach the stop sign or a stop light. That's a Claremont. Hang a left and you walk straight on Claremont. So that's another one of the hat directions. I don't like that hat. It's really hard to know where everything is. And just because you're a cop doesn't mean you know where everything is.
There are also the tougher situations, like this fight between a station agent and a disgruntled patron.
Hey, I go out and smoke a cigarette. He's like,
no.
Right? And then this other dude jumped in. I was cool with no. And he got smart with me. And I flew out the handle, bro. I get like this. I'm shaky right now. I want to hurt that dude.
I know, but you can't do stuff like that.
I know that. Oh, I could.
You will. I know.
Yeah, I got free will, bro.
Yeah,
and disrespect me. Him.
Martinez talked to him quietly in between listening to his problem.
It's just an argument, essentially. So there's no really... People are allowed to argue and vent their frustration. That's obvious. That's just essentially what it was a customer service issue. There's not a crime for being mad, essentially.
If the encounter were to turn violent and Martinez handled it differently, it may have ended up on the Citizen Review Board's desk. Martinez says he's okay with this kind of oversight.
I don't mind it. It's part of the job, and it's another check and balance that goes with police enforcement. Our agency hasn't had it, and to fall in line with every other agency in the modern times, it's expected, so I'm okay with that, and I think that everybody else is.
The BART Citizen Review Board, along with the new community policing strategies, are still in development. But with recent incidents of questionable tactics still fresh in writers' minds, their work is going to be under heavy scrutiny. For Cross Currents, I'm Nicole Jones.
Nicole Jones is a reporter with the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. You can find links to her work and all of our stories on our website. It's kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. BART police are being trained in procedure, a correct, methodical way to do their jobs. And even those of us who don't carry weapons can sometimes use a little structure to do our jobs better. That's the premise of Michael Bush's workshop called The Eight Factors. Bush is a Bay Area native who works with small local businesses through a nonprofit called Inner City Advisors. He sat down with KALW's Holly Kernan.
Tell me about Inner City Advisors.
Inner City Advisors is a nonprofit that was started out of Michael Porter's movement probably 15 years ago.
I don't know Michael Porter.
Michael Porter is a professor at the Harvard Business School that did some research that said the inner cities was a place of competitive advantage, that you could actually get space, real estate cheaply, you could get labor cheaply, and it was underserved. So, in fact, it was a place where business opportunity was. So these entities sprouted up, I think, about 12 of them across the United States, and one of them was in Oakland. And all the rest are gone.
Really?
Yeah, they've all failed except the one in Oakland, which is now called the Inner City Advisors. And I think it succeeded because locally there was good corporate support and an interest in job creation. I think some of those things are easier to do on the West Coast, where people believe in movements and can get behind movements and aren't struggling to debate that job creation is a good thing. I think that the nonprofit community is very mature here, if you will. And so some of the large foundations and community foundations have created environments here that are supportive of nonprofits. And then we've worked very hard to put together a group of advisors like myself that all work on a pro bono basis to provide accounting help, tax help, marketing help, sales help, strategy help, or whatever's needed for this inner city company to give them a competitive advantage.
So tell us about some of these, the people that you're advising for inner city advisors. Tell us about some of the companies.
Well, the way that you become an inner city advisor company or portfolio company is you apply. And there's due diligence that's done to make sure that you've got a sound business concept. It's all about job growth. So it's not about wealth creation for the individual. Job growth has to be a part of the plan.
It's about creating jobs for the community.
Period.
Okay.
And those jobs have to be at a livable wage, or they have to be a little bit below the livable wage, but include health care benefits.
Mm-hmm. So can you mention some of the businesses?
Blue Bottle Coffee, Numi Tea.
Okay.
It's another one. Premier Organics. You know, one of the fastest growing organic food companies in the United States, based in Oakland, in the Mother's Cookies plant, which was there for 90 years until it shut down, laid all those people off just on one day and sitting there doing nothing. And now it's been revitalized and is thriving.
So that's Michael Bush, and he's one of the advisors for Inner City Advisors. So, Michael, you grew up in Berkeley, or you're from Berkeley. How did you become an entrepreneur? What was your pathway to this?
My father was an entrepreneur.
Okay.
So I'm sure that was the pathway. He started his own construction business in Berkeley after getting laid off from a job working in the shipyards at the time. He came here from Georgia at a time when a lot of people did, particularly black people, were looking for some opportunity, and there were a lot of jobs in California related to the war. And so he was a carpenter by trade and came out here to start his family, start his business, or get a job. And was working very hard, and one day got laid off, as he tells the story, used to tell the story, by someone who had been there 2 days. They became the supervisor. So he was an entrepreneur who was an entrepreneur not by choice. He made it real clear that God loves the child who's got his own. So he would always talk about things like, make sure you never have a paycheck coming from just one place. Be wary of debt, because the people who loan you the money aren't really trustworthy. So these are things that I learned from a very young age, and got me thinking about running a business.
Okay, and so let's talk about that leap that you took.
Well, I started running my company. It was a consulting company. I always had a sense that there was something that I was supposed to be doing. It shouldn't be as difficult as it was. So I started to, with a sheet of paper, develop categories that I thought my problems might reside in, and found out that they did. And so I ended up with eight categories. You know, I had people. I had cash. I had vision, mission, and values, leadership. It's a system. And by thinking of them as a system, you never have a day that goes by where you're not thinking about your people, where you're not thinking about your culture, where you're not reflecting on your own leadership, where you're not knowing your cash position and how much money you have in the bank, where you're not thinking about whether you're being true to your values, the reason that you started the company.
So let's bring this back to the recession. How have you seen the recession affect some of the businesses that you advise?
So I think entrepreneurs are clever. They've made tough decisions. Because they're clever, they found parts of the market that have done quite well, like organic food has done quite well, like healthy lifestyles, exercise has done quite well, service has done quite well. If you're delivering to the community, if people really enjoy coming to your place, which is because of the feeling that they get, it's the sole reason, they want to keep that going. And because you're doing something good for them, they're interested in doing something good for you.
That was Michael Bush, creator of The Eight Factors, speaking with KALW's Holly Kernan. What are your tips for making it through in a bad economy? Share your thoughts on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney, and now it's time to meet your neighbors.
I like my neighbors. I like my neighbors.
The neighborhood of Westboro straddles the border between Daly City and South San Francisco. It's mostly residential, with quiet, sloping streets full of brown and beige townhomes built in the 50s and 60s. In Santa Clara County, it's a median income neighborhood, not too rich, not too poor, but unique. Here to tell us more is KALW's Jen Chien. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Ben.
So tell us what is unique about Daly City.
Well, Daly City is unique demographically. Its population is nearly 60% Asian, which is the highest of any U.S. city outside of Hawaii.
So is that population mostly U.S.-born? Are they immigrants?
It's mixed. So you see many generations living in one place, and you can see how they've shaped the place over time. For example, I went to a shopping plaza in Westboro where there's an Asian supermarket, Chinese and Filipino restaurants, a dental building, two nail salons, and a bowling alley.
All right, you're going to tell us about that bowling alley now.
That's right. It's the biggest, party downiest bowling alley in Northern California.
Well, right now we're behind lanes 41 and 42, and it's almost like a full house right now.
Keith Okada, who goes by Keith O, is presiding over Classic Bowling Center in Daly City's Westboro neighborhood. He's managed the bar here for 10 years.
It's pretty late at night. I believe it's 1:30 a.m. We got about 50-something lanes going, and all I see is a party.
He strolls with me down the carpeted walkway behind the bowling lanes, waving and greeting regulars. At 4 to 5 people per lane, there are easily 200 people in here, laughing, talking, munching on calamari, sipping beer, and of course, bowling. Say the words bowling alley, and a lot of people will still picture a bunch of old white men in bowling shirts and polyester blend pants. Or maybe a scene from the Coen Brothers movie, The Big Lebowski.
Smokey, this is not Nam, this is bowling. There are rules.
Whatever they're picturing, chances are it doesn't quite match what's here tonight. An ethnically diverse, though mostly Asian, crowd of young men and women with no polyester pants in sight. Daly City has had a high Filipino population since the 80s, earning it the nickname the Pinoy Capital. Keith O, who's Japanese American, has lived in the neighborhood his whole life.
Most of my best friends I grew up with were Filipino. My wife's Filipino. That's the way I looked at Daly City at one point. The whole community, it felt like it was Filipino dominant. And so I was actually almost honorary. Now it's turned into mix, like everything. You know, every race you can almost think of, I think, is now here, which is awesome to me.
Once people come to Classic, they seem to stay. 31-year-old Ellen Dario is here with her friends for their weekly bowling date.
Yeah, you know, actually, I came here for prom. This was a spot to go to after prom. So maybe rewind to 1998. Let's take it back that much. At that time, I came in with my fake nails and, you know, my dress and my Nike Dunks. It was on.
Freddie Cooper has been Classic's weekend manager for 16 years. He's African-American, originally from Baltimore, and he says he enjoys the diversity of the crowd at Classic.
You know, when you work at a job where you get to meet different people all the time, it's kind of fun, you know. I mean, I actually met my wife here, you know.
Keith O. also met his wife here at Classic. There are pictures of the two of them DJing together on signs that point the way to the bar. The bar, which, by the way, is named the K.O. Sports Bar and Lounge. Keith O. is actually all over this place. He's got his own bobblehead doll and custom Topps trading cards with his face emblazoned on them. There even used to be a life-sized cutout of him near the entrance.
I said, my whole dream is, like, when I was a kid, I didn't have many adult role models, and I didn't have many adults that actually would talk to me. So I know it sounds funny, but when I grew up, I said that I actually was going to create this kind of fame, which I've created here.
Though Keith O. grew up in Daly City, his parents sent him to a historically Japanese elementary school in San Francisco's Japantown. He had friends there, but only saw them during the school day.
So I lived in Daly City my whole life, but I didn't really know too many people except for my neighbors in my neighborhood.
Then, in seventh grade, he transferred to a Daly City school. And, as he puts it, went from being a shy, chubby kid to a popular, chubby kid. And when Classic opened in 1986, he was one of the first kids through the door. He started taking his little sister there every day after school, and then just never stopped.
So my confidence totally changed, and I actually thanked going to a Daly City school, Fernando Vera, and Classic. So Daly City became the love.
As an adult, he wanted to give back to that community, to create a place where kids and adults could feel safe and at home.
And I figured, like, I owe somebody.
So with the support of the DeVincenzi family, which owns Classic, Keith O. started his campaign to build community at the bowling alley. Annual Keith O. Kids Days have free bowling, prize and gift giveaways, and special Bay Area guests like rapper San Quinn, or DJs like KMEL's Scotty Fox, or world-famous DJ Q-Bert of the Invisible Scratch Pickles. He's also from Daly City.
This guy charges thousands and thousands of dollars a scratch for 2 minutes. He DJed for the kids for like 2 hours.
In addition to these Keith O. Kids Days, the bowling center also holds fundraisers for causes ranging from tsunami relief to medical care for Brian Stowe, the Giants fan beaten into a coma at Dodger Stadium last year. Recently, it hosted the city's first Asian American cultural celebration. A diverse range of people show up for these events, from Daly City Council members to local school kids.
I know we had somebody who was just turned 96 years old.
These days, there are more and more regulars, drawn in by the music and the friendly vibe. Christina Sonsip is here with her boyfriend for their weekly bowling date.
I used to be the one that would like to go to bars and lounge and everything, but, you know, with the fact that I've gotten more into bowling and enjoy the sport itself, you know, I do enjoy coming here and not only bowling, but hanging out here at the bar, listening to the music.
It's now 2:20 a.m., 10 minutes till close. A few lanes still haven't finished their games.
Lane 49 and 50, you guys need to bowl a little bit faster.
Bowlers are bringing their shoes back to the counter.
How was bowling? You bowl some strikes tonight?
People look happy and tired. Some are still tipsy, and their friends help them out into the cool air outside.
Classic bowlers, if you could finish up your remaining games and bring your shoes to the front counter, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a great night. Drive safe.
Outside, the parking lot is slowly emptying out. Stars shine overhead, and the lights of the towers on San Bruno Mountain are just barely visible. Keith O. is still inside the bowling alley. There's a kids' tournament tomorrow morning, so he'll be back in less than 6 hours, keeping the place open for the next Keith O. In Daly City, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
What's your community center? Share your story with us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Jen Chien, Audrey Dilling, Irene Flores, Chris Hoff, Artem Skonohovs, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Lisa Ratner, and Judy Silber. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. The music you're hearing is by The Rogers. The members all met at a music instruction store in Oakland's Laurel neighborhood. They have quite a complicated list of ingredients to their sound, which is most easily described as Americana. And they're one of five bands on the bill this Thursday at the Stork Club in Oakland. For more information, visit us at our website, kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffner.
Shake, oh, shake, oh, shake that down.